My name is Bill Rutledge. I'm the project director for ICMC. Welcome to the fifth annual conference. Glad you could make it. I just have a couple short housekeeping announcements before we start. I want to thank our sponsors, especially our leading sponsors, Allegro, Prime Key, AtSec, Dark Matter, FutureX, UL, Oracle, and SafeLogic. We wouldn't be able to do this event without their support, so please do visit with our sponsors and our exhibitors during the next 3 days. This is a plenary session, so we've got everybody in the room. We're going to break for 40 minutes after this, and we will start the track sessions. And this room is going to break up into four different sections, so when you come back, you're going to come in through all these doors that you see around the edge of the conference room. So we'll be out there to help guide you to the correct room. And that first break is going to be at 10:15 if we stay on schedule. Lunch will be served at 12:20. That's in the exhibit area, and all of our breaks and all of the exhibits, or not all of the exhibits, but most of the exhibits are in the exhibit area, which is down this hallway out here to the left. You're going to go all the way down, and you'll see the tables in the exhibit room there, and you'll find coffee. There's going to be a reception tonight in the exhibit area, the same location. That's at 5 o'clock. Please join us for that. That is sponsored by FutureX, and we thank them for their sponsorship. We're going to have an event after that called Dine Around DC. We have three restaurants. We have people signed up to have dinner. If you want to have dinner with a group of colleagues, it's a great opportunity. We've got a couple seats left at each restaurant. So if you're interested, stop by the registration desk, and we'll get you signed up. Or you can just go online, actually. There's a button there on the website, and you can reserve a seat. At 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, there's going to be an open meeting of the CMUF, the Cryptographic Module User Forum, and Matt Keller is going to tell you a little bit about that in a second. Tomorrow night, we have the Cryptographic Module Game Program. It's a game show. It's a lot of fun. We did it last year. We'll have some drinks as well, so stop by. That's tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock. It'll be right in this room here. There's Wi-Fi available. Check page 3 in your show guide. There's log-on information. The slides and audio from all the presentations today, all 3 days, are going to be on the conference website, so check back on the website. We're putting the presentations up as we receive them. We're going to be adding the audio later, so you'll have to check back. There's a very important password on your show guide, page 3. And then we also have some student volunteers. They've been a great help to us, so they're outside. So if you see them around the conference, they're wearing staff ribbons, they can assist you, and please say thanks. And finally, this is just something we wanted to do for fun. We've been doing this for 5 years. We wanted to see who's been with us from the beginning. We thought maybe it might be a handful of people, but it was actually quite a few people. You can see, I think we've cycled through this. You can see their names here. So 26 people, that's pretty good. And let's give a big round of applause to everybody who's attended for 5 years. And as you can see, we have a gift for everybody. We're going to give you this wonderful hat. So stop by the registration desk and pick up your hat. There you go. Aaron Connor, one of our 5-year club members. So actually, Aaron is going to take over now. He's the master of ceremonies for today. And I thank you for coming.
Well, welcome everybody to the fifth version of the conference. It's good to see so many people here, familiar faces and new faces as well. And again, thanks for the hat, Bill. I will be wearing it with pride. First up this morning, we've got Yi Mao from who's the lab director at AtSec Information Security, who is our platinum sponsor for the conference, and she's going to be providing the welcome to all of our attendees. So please join me in welcoming Yi.
Can we have my slides? How do I find it?
Where are the slides, Bill? Which one is yours?
It should be in the folder. I do see. Should be in the folder, I think. Yeah. So in the folder?
If not, it's right here.
Oh, this one, the first one. Okay.
Sorry.
And the slideshow button is.
It's a PDF slideshow, so. Full screen.
Yeah.
It's not showing up on the screen. Okay, hold on. We can't do the split screen here.
Not the PDF.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is the second time that I have the honor and the pleasure to open the International Cryptograph Module Conference. This year is very special since it is the fifth anniversary of the conference. I would like you to welcome you all with an image from the end of the first ICMC. Many of you may still remember that we used the flamingos to say thank you in many different languages for your participation. Now, the flamingos are saying welcome in even more different languages to all of our old and new friends coming to this conference. As we move forward, I would like to share with you some crucial dates, thoughts, and pictures on how the current form of the ICMC came into existence. The idea for the conference first circulated in the ISO meetings in early 2010. However, ESSEC started to consider it at the end of 2012, especially on November the 2nd, when we first established a repository for the conference with the current name ICMC. The name had to address two key aspects, international and the crypto module. Since the focus would be on crypto modules and attract an international audience. During the first couple of months, in 2013, we contacted Bill Rutledge, the current organizer, you just saw him, and started the process. First, we had to set a budget and make the funds available. In April 2013, we set up the website, the logo, and started the process to find the date and venue to host the event. We had to be careful to avoid clashing with the International Common Criteria Conference, as the CC and the FIPS communities share the same set of users, vendors, and labs. The venue we picked for the first ICMC was a Holiday Inn. It was very frugal, nothing fancy, and no entertainment organized after hours. We picked Gettysburg to maximize our chances to have as many people from NIST as possible. Google Maps shows that it's 1.4 miles away from the NIST campus, and it takes 5 minutes to get there. The first ICMC run from the 24th to the 26th of September 2013 to avoid collision with the ICCC, which was held on the 10th to 12th of September. Once everything was settled for the conference, we started to receive reservations. By mid-July, 2 months before the conference started, we had only 4 paying applicants registered for the conference. A representative of Finnish Communications, 2 from COEC, and 1 from Cycle Technologies. Is there anyone from one of these 4 organizations? Raise your hands. Very good. I want to thank you as early believers in this conference. The main goal of the conference was to bring the crypto module communities together. We knew the risks involved, such as losing the money or damaging the company's reputation, if the conference did not go well. We put in a seed. The result of failure or success could be random. However, shortly after those 4 reservations, the community came together strongly, and none of the risks that we were afraid of materialized. On the contrary, the first ICMC was a success and made a profit. We had a total of 163 participants and 13 sponsors. One participant quote was, "This conference is win, win, win." A survey after the first ICMC encouraged everybody to continue with the conference. 64% of people surveyed answered that they would definitely plan to attend the next conference. And 36% of people said they would maybe attend again. But nobody said that they will not attend again. After the first ICMC, ESSEC decided to leave the funds with the profit made to the organizer and the community to continue to prosper the conference. We consider it one of the best investments that our company has ever made, because today, after 5 years, this conference has more than 20 sponsors and close to 400 participants. I want to thank all of our sponsors and exhibitors for supporting the conference. I would also like to thank the program committee for their hard work from planning the conference all the way to putting together the agenda. This year we have some special student volunteers, and thank them for their help. My special thanks goes to Bill Rutledge and Nikki Principe, I saw her was around a while ago, for making the conference possible. We have left the infant and the toddler's face. Now the conference is growing healthier and stronger every year with more sponsors, users, vendors from all market segments and all over the world. The spirit of the conference hasn't changed. It is a platform where we improve the communication among all parties involved in designing, implementing, using, testing, and validating crypto modules, while the load of organizing the conference is shared. Vendors and the labs are all competing, but during the ICMC, everybody comes together as during the Olympic Games to share with each other the fruit of a hard year of work. However, unlike the Olympics, at the ICMC, everybody is a winner. What a great community that we are, and thank you very much for believing in it.
Thanks, Yi. Next up, we have Matt Keller from CoreSec Security, who will be providing a brief update on the crypto module user forum. So over to you, Matt.
Great, thank you.
Do you need slides?
I do. We'll see if that can keep me on time.
Are you in
part? So I really like, I'll let you, if you're okay doing that.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Perfect. So I like Yi's analogy there. We're leaving our infant and toddler stage, and I think we can be rebellious teenagers now. So this is going to be a fun conference. My name is Matt Keller. I wanted to talk about the Cryptographic Module Users Forum, the organization that's been around right about just as long as the ICMC has, because it was right after one of these ICMC meetings that a group of labs and vendors and consultants were sitting and talking and saying, we need something where we're all continuing these types of conversations. And so I want to spend some time talking today about the CMUF, but I also want to spend some time talking about the importance of standards and regulations and why it's really important that we stay involved in the creation and evolution of those standards. In Chicago, in December of 1903, there was a huge fire in a theater. The theater held 2,000 people. It's the Iroquois Theater. They were putting on a production of Mr. Bluebird, a musical, and about 7 minutes into the second act, a small little spark caught on one of the curtains and it moved up and they tried to put the fire out. But they weren't able to, and it went up and got into all of the canvas, the painted canvases that were the scene backdrops. And that very quickly created a fireball. People tried to flee the building. There's 2,000 some people in this building for the show, and they were trying to get out. But unfortunately, while there was enough doors per fire code, most of the doors opened inward, and so people were crushed against them and unable to get out. They had a bunch of gates separating the economic seats from the more expensive seats to try to keep people from sneaking in, but those gates remained in place during the show, and so people in those more expensive seats couldn't get past the gates. Even more concerning was, per fire code, there was all types of ventilation things in the top of the building. But all of those were nailed shut because they were letting in light and messing up the show. So there was lots of things that were in place, lots of regulations, but they weren't always really being followed. Sadly, almost 600 people died in this fire. It's one of the worst fire incidents in the United States. Now, I don't tell you this terribly morbid story first thing in the conference to bring us down, but I want to talk about the outcome from that fire because I think some really interesting things happened. Two particularly interesting things. One of them was an innovation. There was a guy that ran a hardware shop directly across the street from this theater, and he ends up inventing the push panic bar doors that you see in all of these venues like this, where you actually can always push the door out in case of a fire. So innovation because of an issue or a concern. The other really interesting thing that happened as a result of this was people stopped going to theaters, right? They were afraid of fires and things like that. And this motivated theater owners to do something they haven't done. They coordinated with the fire marshals in various different places, and they actually worked on regulations. They knew they needed to have some way to say, no, really, my theater is safe. And so they participated in the drafting of those standards, making sure it met their needs, but most importantly, making sure they had good fire safety. And I think this is an important thing for us to walk away with. We have to learn from our history, and while I'm pulling from a very tragic event, and I'm pulling from a different industry, I want to bring some of those lessons learned from this story into some other industries. The automobile industry is changing dramatically, and this is an area that I think needs more security and needs some smart regulation. But all of the different industries that need additional smart regulation and security, they also have to have fundamental, good, reliable security as the foundation for a lot of the security they're trying to build up. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about the Jeep Cherokee hack in 2014, where a group of researchers took over a car, and they were able to turn on the windshield wipers and change the radio, and ultimately disable the transmission, which stopped the car from moving forward. But this was just a harbinger of stuff to come. Just like the fire I talked about wasn't the first fire, there were many fires that came before, and each time there was more regulation put in place. And I'm not up here preaching more regulation. I want to preach smart regulation and people being involved in how that's done. And so I think this is an area that's going to need some regulation. You think about the modern automobile. There's 100 different electronic control units in a single car, all networked on a CAN bus, talking. That's a huge attack surface. Lots of opportunity for people to mess with things. So I think this is an area that needs good, reliable, tested cryptography to help prevent a financial impact, like we saw in the fire, but also a life impact, like we saw in that fire. Another interesting place that I think needs some smart regulation is going to be the IoT field, Internet of Things. And Internet of Things, this just happened at the end of last year. There was the Mira botnet attack, a huge denial of service attack that actually really impacted Amazon and Netflix and Twitter and a bunch of large internet sites. They were impacted by this, and what makes this attack really interesting, though, was it was primarily launched from IoT devices, digital cameras and DVRs and so forth, taken over by a botnet and then used for the denial of service attack. Large financial impact. These are sites that are visited by millions of people, and they were down. That's an impact. Another area that I think needs smart regulation, but also good, reliable cryptography, what we're here to talk about this week, is the healthcare industry. Recently in the press, there was an article about a certain brand of pacemaker that was able to be taken over by some researchers, and they showed that through some poor code design, some hard-coded keys, but just poor security, they could take over a pacemaker. Well, that has the potential of some real-life impact. But not only that, if you think about the modern hospital, too, unfortunately, I had an occasion to visit a hospital recently, and there was 10, 20 different network devices in every single room. All of these monitors and all these pumps are all on the Wi-Fi network or connected on their Ethernet. And that's a lot of medical information, but those pumps and that monitoring equipment is all used to help sustain life, right? If you have 10 or 20 of these devices in every single room, an average hospital has multiple hundreds of rooms, that's thousands and thousands of devices, a huge attack surface in each hospital. That's not even counting the nurse workstation and other things and other computers there. So that's another area that is going to need smart regulation, but also really good cryptography to secure things. And so these three areas are going to need that good cryptography, but they're going to need smart people involved in how we're going to test that cryptography and how we're going to know that we've met industry needs, but also made sure that we're keeping security and safety. And that's why I want to talk about the Cryptographic Module Users Forum. So the Cryptographic Module Users Forum has been around for 4 or 5 years. We started right after, like I mentioned, one of the ICMC conferences. And this group is a group of about 100 or so people that participate. We have laboratories, we have vendors in the community, we have consultants, we have government folks that participate, and some other people that are just interested in cryptographic validation, like academics and so forth. This group's intent is to foster communication. In fact, our core goal As you can see here in part of our mission statement, sadly it doesn't all fit on a screen, it's a very long mission statement, but this part of it you can see, we want to foster two-way communication. We want to be able to have industry a mechanism to bring thoughts and communications and gathered supported opinion to government. A group of us believe this. A lot of us are affected by this, and bring that to government to help influence and evolve regulation. But we also want to make sure government has a way of also communicating with industry, a clear place to go to address a lot of the community. Because you can post something on a government website, but a lot of people might not go to that website a lot. And so we want to try to provide a way for the government to have more frequent communication and less formal communication with industry. One of the interesting things I've seen as part of the CMUF and as the evolution of our community is the more communication that we have, the more frequent, it just gets easier and we're able to deal with a lot of things instead of being very rigid where we talk once a year or once every couple years, which is how it was a number of years ago. We had the CMUF Steering Committee had a very good meeting with the CMVP yesterday. And a part of that lunching discussion, one of the things that came up was, oh wow, this is that much easier because we're constantly talking. And the CMUF has enabled that, but also this conference has enabled that. And so I greatly appreciate how this conference started getting us together once a year. And while the sessions are hugely valuable, some of the hallway discussions are amazing, and we need a way to continue those conversations throughout the year instead of just saying, oh, hey, it's good to see you again. Remember that thing we talked about a year ago? Yeah, we didn't do anything. We should do that. Yes, we should. And then you wait another year and see whether something happens. So I want to talk a little bit about what we've done. So the CMUF is a volunteer organization. We have folks just volunteering their time. We've set up a steering committee that helps direct the CMUF and where it's going. We've set up a number of working groups that are specifically trying to target and evolve the CMVP standard right now, although we have aspirations for influencing other cryptographic module validations like the 19790 schemes that have been set up in other places in the world. So these working groups, some of them are working on things like, how can we speed up evaluation when the only thing we want to change in an evaluated product is a patch to address one single vulnerability? We're not changing any other code, just fixing this, but we want government to be able to purchase not just the patched tool, but a patch validated tool. So we have a group that's focused on that. There's a working group that's focused on security policy development and those documents and what's the best way to organize that information, discussing keys and algorithms and stuff so that government purchasers can understand what they're purchasing. There's a group that's focused on automation of some of the testing that's required. There's a group that's focused on the integrity testing. So we have a number of devices that have, all the CMVP devices have to run an integrity test, right? Well, it can be very taxing on some low power devices. And so how could we do sample testing so that you're doing little bits of the integrity testing along the way? And there's another group that's focused on testing equivalence. So if you happen to be a product vendor that has 20 different hardware appliances, and the only difference, they're all running the same software, but the only difference is the processor and a couple of the line cards, or speeds and feeds, as we would say. If that's the only difference, well then how do we accelerate that testing? Or how can we make sure we're covering all those devices with assurance, but not have to test each single instance the whole way? So we want to find things like that. All of these working groups have a member from the CMVP participating in those working groups. A number of these working groups are working towards or have already published draft or finalized implementation guidance. They're evolving the standard. And that's what I want more folks involved in. With the more people that get involved, the more we can do to help evolve the standard in a smart way. So, what I would like you to do is consider joining the CMUF. We'd like to have you participate in this organization. There are lots of ways to get involved. You can contact me. Here's my basic contact information. Find me at this conference. I'd love to have a conversation. We'd like to get you involved in our one of our working groups, but also we have a monthly call that we run just to talk about things going on in the evaluation world. What's troubling vendors? What labs are struggling with? Who has a question about the most recent implementation guidance? And most of those monthly calls are attended by the CMVP as well. And so the CMVP will offer up, here's some guidance that's coming, or here's some latest thoughts. There's a lot of great ways for you to get involved and learn more about what's going on. In addition to those monthly calls, we also have a discussion board, an online CMUF forum that you can log into. And you can see the working groups that are doing things, but also other discussions that are occurring. So I want to encourage you to be a part of all of that. So there is one other little piece I did want to clear up too. Like I mentioned, this is a volunteer organization. And so while I get up every year and I talk about CMUF and I plead with you to please come join us and get involved, because like the open source model, a little bit of help from everybody, we can produce a lot. I'm not actually employed by the CMUF, so I'm employed by CoreSec Security. And we're a company that helps different product vendors get through FIPS and common criteria and so forth. So it's all volunteer-based, and we would love to have you be a part of that. So please consider joining the CMUF. Consider getting involved in some of these working groups that are moving things forward. At a minimum, come and join one of the calls so you can get updated information about what's going on, and then we'll nudge you towards those work groups that I want you to get involved in. So with that, please find me later this week if you're not part of the CMUF. Thanks a lot.